go ahead and begin. And for the audio taping, this is session number 4, September 9th. Sessions on the shack. This session, session 4, is titled The Meeting of the Hearts. Come on in. And do we have anyone that's new to the sessions today? You don't. No, just kidding. Now, have you read the book?
Yes.
Okay. So at the point we left yesterday, we had gotten to, Mac had gotten to the shack and had met Papa, who was an African-American woman, and Jesus. Who was Jesus? A Middle Eastern carpenter, and Sarayu, the spirit. And as we get into it today, we're going to be looking at it kind of breaks down to where he spends a little time, kind of personal time, with each of the three during the book. And first, the chapter 6 is titled A Piece of the Pie. And he's spending some quality time with Papa, with the God the Father. And I just love this quote from Papa. She says, Jesus, as a human being, had no power within himself to heal anyone. Only as he rested in his relationship with me and in our communion could he express my heart and will into any given circumstance. So when you look at Jesus and it appears that he's flying, he really is flying. But what you are actually seeing is me, my life in him. That's how he lives and acts as a true human being. How every human is designed to live out of my life. A bird is not defined by being grounded, but by his ability to fly. Remember this. Humans are not defined by their limitations, but by the intentions that I have for them. Not by what they seem to be, but by everything it means to be created in my image. Now, I'm not sure I agree with all that, but what do you think? What kind of images does that conjure for you?
Well, it says that even Jesus was dependent on God's strength and ability and power.
And that's where I, you know, kind of waffle a little bit. But, I mean, it makes sense as Mac talks more with the Trinity, that they are so intimately in relationship with one another.
Oh, I love the part about humans are not defined by their limitations,
yeah,
but the intentions I have. It suddenly expands my horizons just like that.
Yeah, it was the second question. Does that mean that you and I are capable of doing miraculous things?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you might have to define miraculous.
Yeah.
Yes, I think we are. I think miracles happen all the time. We just aren't conditioned to notice.
Oh, yeah, that it reminds me of the first time I ever did a healing service there in Chester. Yeah, we'd advertised we're going to have a service of healing today. And I'm in my office before it starts, putting on my alb and everything. And all of a sudden this thought comes to me, who in the hell do you think you are that you can go out there and lay hands on people and expect them to be healed? And I was scared to death. But the first person that came up, and when I walked up and put my hand on that person's head and started praying, it became very clear. Dummy, it's not about you. It's about the connection. All you are is the connection to God right now. It's God that does the healing. And I think that's what Papa is talking about here. There's so much we're capable of if we let
God. And I have a real negative on that.
Okay.
Because my daughter was in high school, and they had a healing service for her dad, and she knew he would be all right. She was praying. They had the healing service, and when he died, that was the end of the church for her.
Have to be careful. That
and you know, you'd say, well, God's will this way, or didn't.
Yeah.
Didn't.
And that gets to
later on. The why got too big for her.
That's right, the why. And that's where Mac is in all of this, you know, with that. Mac is asking why. You know, why does God, and we'll get to that question later on, why does God allow unspeakable evil to happen? Why does God allow bad things to happen? We had a young lady in our congregation, gosh, was it 3 years ago, Glennon, or four? She had gotten pregnant. She married the guy. And about, what, a couple months, several months before she was due to have the baby, the doctors told them that the brain just wasn't developing, that there was almost no brain tissue at all, and that baby would not survive. Well, his family were country Pentecostals in Alabama, and they said, Reagan, if you have enough faith to pray hard enough, God will heal that baby, and that baby will be normal. If that baby comes out and it is not normal and not healthy, it's because you just don't have enough faith. Well, little Cameron came out and he had almost no brain tissue, but he was a fighter. He not only lived, and we baptized him the next day in the hospital, and the doctors and nurses said, he won't go home. We're sorry, there's no way. Well, 2 weeks later, he went home. About 2 months later, his dad moved out because he couldn't handle being around a baby that was not normal. But we saw, and going to the miracle, we saw miracles. Because that baby, Cameron, only lived for about 3.5 months. And it was nothing but his love for his mother and his mother's love for him, I believe, it kept him alive. I mean, I don't know how many times I was called over there in the middle of the night, Pastor, can you come over? Cameron's dying. And then when his dad left, Reagan, his mother, her brother, little brother, who was in the summer before his senior year in high school, said, I'm going to move in with Reagan to help her with the baby. He gave up the summer of before his senior year in high school to help his little sister. I looked at that and saw a miracle. But yeah, and Reagan is still, I know her dad for several years, and still a little bit battled that. Why did God allow this wonderful, precious little boy be born the way he was? And I don't know the answer, but I know that I learned a lot during that experience.
Kari's question wasn't why did God allow it, but why do people do these things? It wasn't an anger at God, it was just a disbelief in the whole thing. Prayer doesn't do any good. Church doesn't do any good. It's just...
I think we need to be careful when we have a healing moment or service or whatever, because our human idea of healing is not the same as God's idea, I think.
Yeah.
And how we, especially for young people, you know, see the bigger picture of healing and what healing means. We recently had a loss in our congregation. Our 91-year-old associate in ministry was hit by a car early in the morning on his way to the hospital to visit a patient. And he had written a letter that he gave to the staff of the church just days before he was killed. And in it, he said, when you read this, I will have been fully healed. And in his mind, that meant I'll be with God. Yeah. Or I will have had an accident.
Yeah.
That was kind of...
Yeah.
But, you know, it struck me how his concept of being healed was totally different from what you might see, you know, typically.
Yeah, and then go ahead.
Often when I'm praying for someone that is very ill, my prayers are not that a miraculous medical thing will happen, but that people in the process will feel the love of God, so they feel supported through it and can, you know, accept the transition if that's what's coming, but be okay with their process instead of fighting for the miracle.
Right. Absolutely.
How old was your daughter when her dad was done?
She was a senior in high school.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, but the miracle can be finding the strength to let this person person good.
That's what I'm saying. Right. That's like the, part of the healing that I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that happens with the comfort of God to stop fighting.
Right. Often. Right. Pain is now gone.
Yeah.
And there's no better place to be than back with God.
Yeah. So. And one of the early part, the earlier part of that quote, about Jesus and his power, it reminded me of another book that I would recommend. If you've never read The Last Temptation of Christ by Nikos Kazantzakis, it's not nearly as easy a read as this. But for me, at least, and I know that there are a lot of churches that condemn the book, and the, especially the movie, but it portrays a very human Jesus who's just almost ready for a mental institution because he's struggling with, am I really the Son of God or am I human? And for me, that meant so much that when Jesus is hanging on the cross, there's still that, okay, I'm human. Am I crazy thinking that God's going to save me? I mean, because if Jesus went to that cross knowing, hey, I'm the Son of God, I can handle this pain for a little while because I know God's going to raise me up. No big deal. But if Jesus is hanging on that cross in such excruciating pain, not knowing 100%, or, you know, depending on God, but the, there's all, you know, a human being, am I crazy? Is have I taken, if I bet, you know, put my money on the wrong horse, but still said no, Satan? Because there's that verse in Luke after Jesus' temptation that says, and then Satan departed from Jesus until an opportune time. And for Kazantzakis in the book, the opportune time was as Jesus is dying on the cross, Satan comes to him and says, what are you doing this for? Look what's going to be done in the name of Christianity, in your name, and shows him the Crusades and all. Look what you could have if you come down off the cross, and shows him getting married to Mary Magdalene and having children and grandchildren.
But the hard part of this book is it's a child. And I know for me, children's deaths are so much more heartbreaking than other deaths,
yeah,
because there is healing, and when a child is taken, it does seem like there's some injustice. When my parents go one day, they're 85 and 83, and I have a wonderful stack of memories to go back and say how blessed I was. But when I was in high school, our minister's little six-year-old died, and I had babysat him, and he got spiral meningitis and died quickly. And I didn't understand, like her daughter, I didn't understand at the time, why would God take a young infant? She had had a hysterectomy, and this was their only child they were going to have. You know, just all those things that I think it diminishes in certain deaths where they've been ill for a long period of time and they are healed. But in a child's innocent death, when this was a healthy child, it does take you back a little bit.
And one thing, and somebody mentioned it already, we have to be careful in how we talk about things. Because, you know, in talking about, you know, let's lay on hands for healing, we need to be more specific about what healing might mean. And I know Glenna didn't mean anything by this. It's just the way, you know, some of us are raised. But when she said the child was taken,
Yeah. What
does that tell some people? That God has reached down and snatched. Yeah, God snatched that. I was on call at Richland Memorial Hospital one Friday night in the emergency room. Actually, it was only supposed to be on call for an hour while the regular chaplain was on his supper break. But during that time, a young couple came in with their baby who had died of crib death. And I had been warned about this ahead of time, but I was with this family, this couple, for, I don't know, probably an hour or so. And then their pastor came in.
What did he say?
Walked in the door, his first words, he looked at the couple and said, which one of you sinned that God took your baby from?
Oh, my God.
How much damage?
I was
so irate and ready to just, but I had been trained and told that this might happen, and what we were to do is to just leave the room. That it's not the time or place to argue theology. But yeah, we have to be careful about how we term things. You know, take, you know, God took your loved one. Well, that means you can picture a God that's up there just like the in Clash of the Titans, you know, Zeus and they're up there, you know, playing a big chess game with each of us. You know, my God doesn't reach down and take people. My God is ready there to embrace them when they pass on, when they do die. Yes.
I had a very good friend who had a baby who actually was stillborn. His full term was stillborn. And, her mother kept on pestering her about, you know, what did you do that caused that? And a year later, she had another baby, and within 6 months, the mother had put enough pressure on her that she left her husband and went back to live with her parents. And a year later, she committed suicide. Mm. And it was such a loss. And from my perspective, and I don't know everything about it, you know, it seemed like part of it was this pressure and this guilt about what did I do that caused the first baby's death.
So words can be very powerful. We need to be very careful how we use them. The next chapter, Mac is going to spend some quality time with Jesus. And it begins with him going down, if you remember, going down to the kitchen for breakfast. And Jesus is cleaning up batter that's been spilled, pancake batter that's been spilled on the floor. Of what in the Bible does that scene remind you?
Washing feet.
The washing of the feet, yeah. Because I think it even said he had an apron or something tied around him and he's down on his knees. And just this scene of Jesus, you know, humbling himself. How do you treat those you love when they make a mess? Or how do you treat people that you don't know who make messes in your life? Do we have a tendency to put the apron on and get down on our knees and help clean up the mess? Or
are you often angry and judgmental?
Yeah, often angry and judgmental. Goes back to another scene in the Bible, chapter 3 of Genesis. You know, pointing fingers. The mess has been made. Okay, who did it? She did it, not me. Of course, he points at the serpent.
I'm feeling kind of like what you said of being intolerant of intolerance. And I am.
Yeah.
And so this is a different message.
Yeah, it's very easy to say, well, they made the mess, let them clean it up. But that's not what Jesus did. And that's not what God did. I mean, we've made a mess of this earth. And continue to. I mean, we talked about global warming this morning, an eye-opener. Jesus says, relationships are never about power. And one way to avoid the will to power is to choose to limit oneself to serve. How is that reflected in Jesus' life?
Well, Jesus came. He came to serve. Yeah. That was he was a servant.
And he lived within the boundary of humanity. Mm-hmm. He did what he did as a human being. Now, that's not to say he did things that I've never witnessed another human being. But for the most part, I think he lived as a human versus living as divine.
I mean, he showed his servanthood and humility in so many different ways. I mean, he had 12 guys around him who basically, especially if you read Mark's gospel, didn't have a clue. And a lot of us, I mean, I'm not talking about myself. You know, if I had 12 guys around me that were that clueless, I probably would have jettisoned them, you know, gotten rid of them long before the end. But, you know, but Jesus, you know, brought them along, continued to love them, continued, you know, the night before he's going to die, you know, the night he's going to be betrayed, he's down there washing these guys' feet that he knows are going to run off and hide. And deny they ever knew him. You know, he's handing the bread and the wine to Judas, who's already sold him out. And then the next question, in what ways is this advice practical or impractical? To limit yourself, to be a servant.
Well, it's a question of whether that is limiting yourself or freeing yourself to become fully, fully alive.
As parents, we're constantly limiting ourselves in order that our children can learn things for themselves. If we didn't limit ourselves, they would grow up to be 21-year-old toddlers.
But back to making a mess with the children. We clean up too many of their messes and disempower them where we should let them. I think of a spilled milk or something.
Uh-huh.
Let them clean it up so they can be empowered, so they can clean up their mess.
Part of that's finding that fine line of protecting your child and allowing them to.
It isn't easy.
Yeah, it isn't. It isn't. We get back to the thing about. Yeah, they don't give training classes before you take your baby home from the hospital. You don't have to pass a test.
Well, I think Holden does a great job of this, though. Talk about a serving. I mean, I can count already the relationships I have met in washing dishes and making pita bread and making pizza dough, you know, where I just said, yeah, I'll help, but if I hadn't have helped, I would have missed out on building those relationships with people that I didn't know when I came up on this mountaintop.
Mm-hmm. Jesus says, I am the best way any human can relate to Papa or Sarayu. To see me is to see them. And I wondered, is it possible for us to relate to Papa or Sarayu, the Spirit, apart from Jesus?
I agree with Mac in that he says he can relate to Jesus. He's more comfortable being around Jesus because we know so much about him of being human. And I can really relate to that because that's probably who I relate to the most is Jesus.
So Jesus is the easiest way to relate.
Right.
If we say, is it possible? Yes.
I see all of them as manifestations of God.
Yeah.
And you know, some people will respond to different manifestations.
Mm-hmm. Chapter 8, they're having breakfast together. And Lucia says, God, who is the ground of all being, dwells in, around, and through all things. And I know some of the critics of the book have said, pantheism, or actually the ones who don't know much will say pantheism, but it's not pantheism. Pantheism is that God is those creatures, but panentheism is that God dwells in and around and through all things. Is that correct? Is that consistent with Christian thought? Pardon?
Doesn't she?
See, I believe that. Matthew Fox was thrown out of the Catholic Church partially because he espouses this belief. He is now an Episcopalian. He runs a really neat place out in California that I haven't been able to get to. But this was part of it. If you've ever read, anybody here read any Matthew Fox? Creation Spirituality. Great book, where basically it's based on he's partially rejecting the Augustine principle of original sin. He said, there is no original sin in the Bible. The Hebrew people do not believe in original sin. He said, who do we think we are as human beings that we could take everything that God said in chapter 1 of Genesis is good and we could totally destroy it? That we believe there's sin, but there is also original blessing. Fox likes to emphasize original blessing, and that we can see and feel and experience God all around us in all that God created that's good. Yeah, we have trees dying out here, but that's because partially because of what we've done. Yes, sir.
Is that Matthew Fox related to Emmett Fox, who wrote Sermon on the Mount?
No. No, it's not. I don't think so. Because I've read his Confessions, which is kind of his autobiography, and I don't remember that name. He grew up in suburban Madison, Wisconsin, of all places, and went into the Catholic priesthood. And when he started talking about original blessing, actually the current pope is the one who kicked him out. When he was, the current pope used to be the head of the office of the Inquisition in Rome.
You still have it?
Pardon? Oh, yeah.
Still have the office.
Yeah, it's still called the office of the Inquisition. It goes under other titles too, but Fox was denied even a hearing or any kind of trial. He was simply thrown out. Yes, sir.
I've read a book called Original Blessing. Is he the author?
Yes. Yep. Okay. Creation Spirituality, Original Blessing. And I was told by one of my seminary professors, be careful, some of Fox's stuff is a little out there. And it is. But if you enjoy reading about more about the feminine side of God, Fox does a lot of that. He tries to connect Christianity with other faiths around the world. It's almost like this book. There's going to be some stuff that you're going to say, that's not right. But it spurs thought.
Well, it may not be right for you, but it might be right for somebody.
Right, and it might spur something that pulls you closer to God. Growth means change, and change involves risk. Stepping from the known to the unknown. Have you seen this played out in churches?
Yeah.
Change. We haven't changed that light bulb for years. Why would we change it now? Just because it's gone dark.
We tried that 12 years ago. It's not going to work.
Yes. Yeah. Or we've got a cartoon blown up on bulletin board in the entryway of the church that shows a ship sinking and the words coming out, "We've never done it that way before."
Yeah.
How about in your life? Glenna likes to tell people that until she met me, she had never taken a risk in her life. So she bundled them all up in one.
You're the riskiest thing I've ever done.
Papa says, I love the ones I'm angry with just as much as those I'm not. How does that thought make you feel?
Included.
Included.
God's
been at you.
It doesn't matter either way.
Yeah.
And it's understandable because with your kids or grandkids, in fact, maybe you love the ones you're angry with a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes we expect more of them, don't we?
That,
one child of mine was easier than the other. The more difficult was the one that I have the tightest relationship and who grew me as a person a lot more than the other one.
But when it gets difficult, is I think the point in the book that when Papa says, I love those I'm angry with just as much as those I'm not, when we actually put faces on some of those that we think God should be angry with, and the faces are people that we don't want God to love. Mm-hmm. Like a Saddam Hussein. Or Adolf Hitler, or in my case, George W. Bush. Folks, that's one of my blind spots for those 8 years was, God can't love him. There's no way God could love, but God does love him. Just as much as he loves me or you. And that's hard for me to swallow.
Something related to that. I'm often put off by these God Bless America bumper stickers. Because it's, Bless America's fine, but it seems to carry this exclusive, like, bless us, but not Saddam, not Iraqis, God bless all creation.
And I ran into trouble I had a couple folks leave the congregation in Greenville, South Carolina, right after 9/11, when I was kind of trying to express the same thing, that we need to, to love everyone and try to understand, we don't condone what has happened. It's terrible. There's no excuse for it. Why do these people hate us that much? We need to figure this out. And I had a couple people that came and said, it doesn't make any difference. They're evil. you know, we're Americans, we need to stand together, da 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 da. And I'm like, but God doesn't, you know, God doesn't just love America. There, if you look at the satellite images, there are no boundary lines. You know, we're, our sinfulness created boundary lines between countries. It's our sinfulness that makes the Iraqis and the Iranians, not ours as Americans, but it's sinfulness among human beings that makes the Iraqis and the Iranians fight each other all the time. Or the Greeks and the Turks, or the northern people, the Northern Ireland Protestants and the Catholics and
Palestinians.
The Palestinians and the Jews. It's, you know, that story goes back in our Bible for centuries and centuries. And it comes down to a family fight among the children of Abraham. You know,
and
Isaac and Ishmael.
And thus the many lessons about love your enemy that are in the Bible, right?
But and that's, you know, growing up, I hated to read the Old Testament. I thought, what's the Old Testament got to say to us? But now I love the stories of Genesis because, you know, I read them and say, okay, that's me. The world hasn't changed all that much. We still lie, we still cheat, we still try to put things over on one another.
And grace still abounds.
And grace still abounds. Mm-hmm. You know, God should have blown it up and started it all over again way back when. But he's so unbelievably patient and grace-filled with us. As people and as individuals. Yes, sir.
I can remember with my youngest daughter, when she would do something that was just totally out of bounds, before we started arguing, I would say, but I love you. And then I would say what I had to say. But I wanted her first to know she was grounded in love.
Yeah.
That what I was saying may sound angry, it may sound she doesn't want to hear it, but I'm saying it because I love her.
Yeah, that's great. Because I do a workshop on for parents and teens on keeping your teens off drugs. And it's based around a couple videos by a retired state trooper from Tennessee, a gruff fella, but he talks about raising his two girls, and when they got in trouble, he said, I'd take them to their room, and we'd sit down, and we'd talk about what they had done wrong, and I made sure they knew exactly what they had done wrong, then I would mete out their punishment, whatever it was, but before I left the room, he said, I'd look them in the eyes and say, does Daddy love you? And he would make sure that they knew that he loved them just as much now as he did before they had done whatever they did. And he said it's important as parents to discipline, but to let them know that all through the discipline that you love them. You know, why should you get mad and spank them or put them in the corner or, you know, ground them or whatever and then stomp off and leave them thinking, does Daddy still love me? No, let them know. That's great. Let them know you love them. As God has let us know down through the ages, I love you. I don't like you a whole lot right now, but I still love you. Max says, what's the value of a little girl being murdered by some twisted deviant? And Papa responds, there are millions of reasons to allow pain and hurt and suffering rather than to eradicate them. But most of those reasons can be understood only within each person's story. What do you think Papa's talking about?
Well, we don't all live the same story. So within this dimension of life, truths look different. So we can only understand the pain when it's, we can only truly understand the pain when it's personal in our own life. We can't really understand your pain or the pain that's happening on the other side of the ocean. Truly understand it.
And can we really understand, sometimes, I don't know if we even understand our own pain at a particular point in time. know there are some things that I that came that that reared an evil that reared its ugly head in my life about 6 years ago. And you know, looking back, I can say, how stupid can you be? And you knew that was wrong. How dumb, how egotistical. But as I look back now, about 6 months ago, a lady in our congregation called me because her husband was having the same, she suspected was having the same problems. And I was able to help him get into therapy, and the two of us talking about our mutual problem. And that marriage is doing, I think it's doing better now. So, you know, in the midst of it, in the midst of the pain of having to, you know, in it, I had to resign as pastor of a particular church and go on leave from call for about 6 months. And in the midst of it, it was horrible. I couldn't understand how that pain could have anything positive, any positive influence, effect on my life. But as Paul writes in chapter 8 of, I think it's chapter 8 of Romans, that you know, God can help to make, help us find good out of any circumstance. But while we're in the midst of it, you know, I was railing at myself, and the pain was real.
Rabbi Kushner, and when bad things help happen to good people, if I have to go through this, at least let me grow.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's great. We need to always keep that. We're always going to have bad things happen.
And I think God's given us free will and given everyone free will and has offered us this glorious, this chance to engage in this glorious relationship of love with Him, but that's a choice. It's not a command or whatever. And so, you know, we're populated with this world of people with free choice and those things, and God has said, you know, it's up to you. To, you know, you can bring forth heaven on earth or whatever, and it, as all the stuff intersects, it gets really messy.
It does. Yeah. In fact, I think that's part of the time with Sarayu in the, we'll get to in a minute, out in the garden, that, you know, life gets messy. And it gets even messier, yeah, when free will's thrown in. And that's one of my questions for God when that day comes. Is, you know, again, is that a design flaw? Did you anticipate that you know, when you gave us free will that we would mess it up? Well, obviously God, you know, had to have known that we would.
But without the free will, we couldn't have the relationship and the love. And
that's right.
If you look even at a marriage where there isn't free will, where one is dominated,
yeah,
that true love isn't possible.
Yeah.
And in the same way, that free will and choice is what allows us to have fully loving relationships with God and with each other.
That's
and
right.
Without that, we're automatons or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's exactly.
That's the greatest gift.
Mm-hmm.
What can we call pain and hurt and suffering when we have never really suffered the way our Lord did? I mean, we call it pain and hurt and suffering, but do we really know true pain, hurt, and suffering? I don't think
people do.
Some people do. But we need to be careful, because as we were having this conversation, I was having this conversation with somebody a week or so ago about, you know, sometimes we whine and moan, mm-hmm. at least about, oh gosh, my car. Yeah, somebody tried to clean my car and messed up the paint job. Is that real pain and suffering when you think about the folks who are over in Pakistan right now?
Walking.
Who have lost their homes. Yeah, walking because they don't have cars, whose homes have been completely destroyed by flooding and have no place to live. We think sometimes that times are bad, but your son's experience, I don't know your son, but my guess is that his experience in Pakistan and Afghanistan is that here are folks that have so little compared to what we have, and yet are feel like they're so blessed to have someone like Greg come and, you know, help them build a school. And just be able to get up each day and have their friends and family around.